Ah.
Mrs. Putnam, you simply cannot remain a widow with a young child and continue to live in your house.
Oh, of course. Of course, it's much too grand for two of us. Maybe a nice condo in Brookline or Back Bay?
For Pete's sake, we're not your realtors.
Commander, may I suggest you convey your intentions?
Right, okay, so basically it's a quid pro quo. You need security, I need to represent traditional Gilead values, so you can move in here with the kid if you want.
As his new wife and child. A sacred union, of course.
This is a marriage proposal?
Yep. So, what do you say?
I have a choice.
That's hurtful.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jason.
And this is the Handmaid's Tale podcast.
This week, we're covering The Handmaid's Tale, Season 5, Episode 9, Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Yep.
Yeah, that came
That's
up.
That's what it was.
But Jason, you were not with us last week. I feel like before we start talking about allegiance, we need to hear, a few of your thoughts about the last episode.
Thank you. I mean, first off, I very much enjoyed hearing you guys with Diana last week. She was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, Diana.
Yeah, that was fun.
To be able to hang back and listen as a fan. Yeah, because the last episode we all did together was when June helped Serena give birth. And I was feeling a lot of compassion for Serena and kind of hoping June would keep helping her. And she kind of didn't. And I understood the bond kind of faded and she went back to being someone at odds, and I was disappointed in her though. I wrestled with it, because there's a part of me that's like, wow, when someone like that lets their guard down and starts to realize the error of their ways, you kind of have to nurture it, and she kind of betrayed it a little bit. But I also think that's how most people would act, and I can't feel too harshly towards June because of what she's been through at the hands of Serena. That doesn't erase all of that. So, and she did try to help, like when she came back at the end at the detention center and said, you can't help your child if you don't go back there and be with him. I mean, that was like, she was in the spirit of helping there. I think she was also kind of talking to herself because she was weighing whether to go to New Bethlehem. But anyway, that was hard to watch the whole thing, but it was good writing and everything. And I liked it. A couple other notes. I had the whole conversation about the cry it out method. I hate cry it out. I know there's some people who stand by that, to each their own, but it really, for me, when I was trying to get my 11-year-old when he was a baby to sleep, and I had this friend who's a devout Christian and one of the sweetest people I know, by the way, she kept telling me, you got to do it that way. And she even gave me a book to read about it and everything. And I'm like, nope.
Oh, wow.
Because I just think if everything in your body is, your instincts are like, go to your child now, and it's painful not to, that's
biological.
I'm listening to my instincts there, Yeah. We did that with my brother. My mom heard that a lot, and my brother was 7 years younger than me. And I remember it just being so hard to resist
going. My mom tried to tell me to do that. My husband used to carry the baby around and put a blanket over their head like a canary and rock and do everything to get the baby to stop crying.
He did not do that.
I can't see how it would be helpful for an infant when they're so dependent on us for everything. If they're crying, there's probably a good reason.
I mean, the idea is to teach them how to self-soothe so that they can then sleep in their own room without you there. And I can understand that. And if people do that and it's successful, you know, I think that's probably what my mom did with me, and I'm fine. So I'm not saying if you do that, you're bad. But for me, I just couldn't stand it. So we just had Nico in the bed with us until he was ready to leave, you know, and he did eventually. He was 25. No, I'm just kidding.
I think you have to do what's right for you and your family. Like, you make that decision. It's not something that one of us, I guess, can say is the right or the wrong thing to do.
Right. And parenting is, you know, people have different opinions on how to do that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different opinions. Lawrence, I may have missed cues before, but to me, it seemed like this episode really pointed out, I mean, last week's episode, about how much of an architect of Gilead Lawrence was. It almost sounded like he was the primary one in this episode. Kept saying, that's why I did it this way and stuff, which makes it really interesting that he's also not a believer too much in the ideology. He was just kind of using religion to accomplish the aims of saving the world. He said, I fucking did it, or whatever he said. I also thought it was really interesting how he thought democracy and capitalism almost destroyed the world, or whatever he said. Because I think unchecked capitalism is very destructive for the world. So you're getting a little bit more of a peek into what's going on in his head, which is long overdue, you know, or I don't know if it's overdue, but it's something that we've wanted. So that's been really interesting this episode too. And Serena said that he'd been pitching New Bethlehem since the beginning. And I'm like, okay, so he really, I don't know, man. He's like, he wasn't totally on board with the way things were going from the very beginning, but he just, I think it was more important to him to try to solve this whole birth crisis and toxic environment and stuff. And then the last thing is just, you guys pointed it out when you podcasted, but Lawrence is a riot saying, Serena says, I'm not going to live in the same house as my child's kidnappers. And he goes, do you have an irony deficiency? And then when he told June, I've been grooming Nick, not sexually, but he's helping me.
Oh, man, I know.
That was funny.
Yeah, he's the comic relief that we need on this show.
We didn't this get that this episode
felt
week.
Like a comedy. No. The whole thing with him proposing to Naomi, I thought was hilarious.
A little, yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly it felt sad.
Yes. Like, I can't go any further unless I do this because I need to have a wife because it's been determined that's what I need. And it made me uncomfortable, like, for him in that moment because I don't think he wants a wife.
No. And the look on his face when he walked away and was alone was just, you know, he's thinking of Eleanor.
Yeah, he's over Eleanor. And if he was, he wouldn't want Naomi Putnam either.
No.
No. We got emotion from him in this episode. Like, at different times, we did get to feel some emotion from him. Was not the usual Lawrence. But I feel like we should just jump into the conversation, because we kind of already have.
Yeah, so I think we should also mention that we're not going to talk about any feedback on this episode this week. That we're going to have a separate feedback episode that will come out a couple days later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that way we'll be able to actually respond to feedback for this week's episode for you guys and get more of it in. And then we'll do the same thing for the finale, and then we'll have a feedback finale episode after that. You can talk about the finale or the whole series or whatever you guys want.
Yeah, that sounds great. Wendy, would you like to deliver to us your first point?
Thank you. So this is talking a little bit in the same vein that we were just talking about with Lawrence. The episode made me really angry. And on second watch, I was just angrier. I was really mad at Lawrence this episode. Like, June's right. Gilead needs to be burned down to the ground. And Lawrence saying he's trying to make things better, but I can't accept the things that he feels like he has to do to make things better. You know, he's just going to continue to try to destroy the remnants of the United States. And it just makes me, I don't know, I felt really angry this episode. Angry at him, angry at Gilead. I don't know, maybe I'm sensitive because of current events, but I really, it was just sad, and I was really upset with Lawrence, and I don't think you can keep doing bad things and justifying them by saying you're trying to make things better. Like, well, I might have to kill 50,000 or 75,000 people, but I'm going to make things better for the ones that are left. I don't like it. I don't think it's right. I think he's just kidding himself about his justifications. I didn't like it at all. I felt like he planted that evidence. He planted the data that they used to do the raid because he knew that June would find it. And he knew that the Americans would think it was a safe source because they didn't think Lawrence and Nick would do that to her.
Ah, that's, I mean, there's nothing in the episode that says that, right? That's just speculation.
Right.
That it was a trap?
No, that Lawrence had anything to do with it.
Oh, I think Lawrence called her immediately after. I think he obviously had something to do with it.
I agree with you, Wendy.
Well, there was a raid on the school where June's daughter is being kept.
Right.
And so he must have figured, okay, the U.S. are attacking, trying to take June's daughter. Probably June has something to do with that. No?
Well, they encrypted the data into the video that Lawrence gave June.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And that's what they used to do the raid to find the location, and it was all a trap.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that part. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Wendy, yeah. I'm on the same page as you because that was a question that I had. Did Lawrence purposely do this?
He did. I mean... Obviously, I feel strongly about it, but I
think... No, I think you're right. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Now that you mentioned that video, I'd forgotten about that, yeah.
And then he calls her immediately afterwards to just rub her face in the whole situation. And he's really trying to manipulate her to make her see that she has no other options. That if you want to see your daughter, this is the only way you're going to do it is my way. And she pleaded with him. I mean, the exchange between the two of them was just heartbreaking for both of them, but especially for June. She pleaded with him, I need my daughter here with me. It was heartbreaking. And he said, no. He said, no.
They're both symbols. He had said they were both symbols. Both Hannah and June are now symbols.
Right.
So... they're pawns in his game that he's playing. Yeah.
And to some extent in the Americans as well.
Yeah.
But it made me feel even worse. I'm so outraged for June and Hannah, but it made me feel even worse because I'm afraid that June may, if all else fails, that she may be reduced to going to New Bethlehem. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's a different arc, but... I'm worried that that's the arc that's coming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you know how I think all of us, or at least I, thought at the beginning of the season when Serena was off to Gilead to bury Fred, that she may become a handmaid in Gilead.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking. And then, to my surprise, the show pulled a left turn and made her this powerful figure there, a big cultural icon and everything. And then she went back to Canada to start this Gilead Cultural Center. And I was like, wow, I can never predict what happens on this show. But then she kind of did end up, I mean, she still hasn't really experienced the worst of what it means to be a handmaid, but she's experiencing some of it. You know, she has no power and she's about to have her child taken away from her. So they kind of faked us out, but then they did go there. And so I kind of thought that's what was going to happen with June and New Bethlehem, that she's invited to live in Gilead, but no, she says no and instead has this raid to get Hannah out. But then the raid fails. So then I thought, okay, that's just like what happened before. We thought it was going to happen. It didn't, but then it did. So then I was kind of surprised that she didn't end up going. She told Lawrence, fuck you. And so then I'm like, what is she going to do? And she asked Mark what to do next. And he suggested Nick, and that didn't really help, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, now, I mean, well, at one point, I still don't know what the next step is, but at one point when she was talking to Mark, when June was talking to Mark, he said something like, you know, with your status, with you helping, you know, Angel's Flight, mm-hmm. and you speaking at Fred's sentencing or whatever, you have a lot of power. You should step up. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm not ready to do that right now. And I don't know what he meant by that. Do you?
I think he thinks she should have some kind of role in the U.S. public government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that's another possibility mm-hmm. for what could happen next. You know, it seems mm-hmm. like the two choices we know of are, okay, go to New Bethlehem or do this thing that Mark's saying, which I think you could be right. Yeah. Just take on a more public role or some curveball that we haven't thought of yet. Because knowing this show, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, I don't know that I trust Lawrence if June goes to New Bethlehem after this week.
I don't. No.
I don't trust that he wouldn't take Nicole away from her and have her executed.
I don't think he would have her executed. Oh,
I don't think that's where his head's at all.
No, but I don't trust the whole of Gilead. And
yeah.
I mean, Lawrence was on site when June got tortured in the last season, I believe.
Was he?
Do you really think that Commander McKenzie is going to allow June to live in New Bethlehem without wanting to take her out himself? Because he even said in this episode, well,
I don't trust Commander McKenzie for shit. I mean, yeah, exactly. And that's another thing that's either going to happen in the finale or next season, you know?
Yeah.
They've been talking about McKenzie wanting to go after June, so I feel like there's going to be something mm-hmm. there. But as far as Lawrence is concerned, I mean, I think what he thinks is the normal way of doing things didn't work, so we tried this. I mean, what they tried, whether or not he agreed with it or not, if he was a primary architect of Gilead and he thought, hey, we'll just have to take a couple hits here and have a bunch of people get raped so we can save the world, that's fucked up. So, yeah, that's exactly what he did.
And he's continuing it.
Well, mm-hmm. now, I mean, he like June says, your wife never liked you or she hated you and because she was ashamed of you. And I think he's ashamed of himself. And mm-hmm. I'm not standing up for him necessarily. I'm just trying to explain where I think his head is at, that he's like, yeah, that was too far. And I really messed up. And now I'm going to try to fix it because he thinks, you know, we did solve the birth problem. So the seeds are of what is needed for the world is here, but there's so much wrong and I need to fix it. But the fact is that it's just so rotten that it just needs to be thrown away.
Yep.
Right. But I think Lawrence is trying to do good now. And I don't think he would F June over. I think he wants this New Bethlehem idea to work as he's laid it out, but he has to fight against the other commanders and also the ideology that they have instilled in the people of Gilead. You mm-hmm. know, he's got a lot going against him and he really messed up anyway. So F that guy. I mean, I you're right. Like, but I just don't think that he's like trying to lie to June and then he's going to screw her over when she gets there. I think he's trying to do good.
But I think it could be out of his control.
Yeah.
I think she could get there and something bad will happen. Because and not because Lawrence wants it,
of course,
but because it's out of Lawrence's control. He can't.
Yeah.
I mean, he's marrying Naomi Putnam because he absolutely has to. What's he going to do if they put a handmaid in his house? Because they very well could.
He'll do the same thing he did last time.
I mean, that Naomi will buy it.
The silver lining of that is that she has a kid. And mm-hmm. so maybe there would be less pressure for them to have another child.
And true. I think she'll just be grateful that she didn't get sent to the colonies, which is what she expected.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting scene.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy, do you have anything more to add to your point?
No, I think that's good.
All right. Jason, what do you have for your first point?
It's okay. So Lawrence's proposal and Lawrence and Naomi, and I think, yeah, he's under the illusion that he can fix Gilead, that he can make it more fair and less abusive. And so in order to do that, he realizes that he needs to be in a position to continue making changes, which means getting married. He has to fit in. And so when he's standing there with Aunt Lydia, we don't know any of this yet. We just know they've got something going on. And he says he's nervous and she's trying to reassure him that he's doing the right thing. And then Mrs. Putnam or Naomi comes in. She seems nervous too. And I really did feel like this whole scene was out of a comedy to me. It killed me. She's like, "Blessed day, Commander," and Aunt Lydia. And then Lawrence is just sitting there with his blank look on his face, like staring off into space. And then he like wakes up for a second. "Tea?" Like, "Oh, I need to be polite here. I have to say something." And she goes, "No, thank you, but please have some yourselves." And he's like, "I hate tea." and then she goes, "I recognize that the incident with Mr. Putnam has left you on your own with a young child, and I've considered what to do about your future. Please don't send me to the colonies." And I didn't realize she was going to say that. I should have, though, because she's really nervous.
What's happened to people she knows.
Yeah. She's suddenly, if you're not in this family unit, and not only that, he's the one who had her husband killed. She goes, no. I mean, Lawrence goes, "No, you're not responsible for anything Mr. Putnam did. Are you kidding? That guy, you deserve a reward for putting up with him." And she's like, "A reward?" And he goes, "In a sense." And I felt like that was him saying, like, "Yeah, well, it's marrying me. So I don't know if you'd consider that a reward or not." And I'm feeling really sorry for her throughout all this, by the way, even though she's been pretty unlikable before. At times. She's complicated, though. But anyways.
Well, you might be complicated if you were married to Warren Putnam, too. I mean, because he right. was.
But she's.
Bad.
Yeah. She's definitely had her bad sides. So she says, Aunt Lydia says, "Mrs. Putnam, you can't remain a widow in that house." And she goes, "Oh, of course. It's much too grand. Maybe a nice condo in Brookline or Back Bay," which. I enjoyed hearing those names because I used to live in Boston and yep. I used to live in the Back Bay, actually. Lawrence is like, "For Pete's sake, we're not your realtors." And then Aunt Lydia goes, "Commander, may I suggest you convey your intentions?" Right. Okay, so basically it's a quid pro quo. You need security. I need to represent traditional Gilead values. So you can move in here with the kid if you want. And that's like, what? And Aunt Lydia goes, "As his new wife and child." And she goes, "This is a marriage proposal?" And he goes, yep. "So what do you say?" Like, let's just get this over with. He's so uncomfortable about the whole thing. And she's like, "I have a choice." And he goes, "That's hurtful," which is funny. And then Naomi and Lydia go off to the side and she's like, "He had my husband killed in front of me." And yeah, I mean, when you think about it, well, she probably had some amount of respect for him. I didn't get the sense that she thought she was trapped with this guy, even though you wouldn't be surprised if someone did feel that way. But she thought, we're this power couple, right? And probably thought he was a good man or respectable in his community or had some things about him that she admired. And now he's been killed in front of her, and the guy who had him killed is coming to ask her to be his wife. That's like freaking Vikings or something going in and killing the men and taking their women, you know?
Yeah.
But
it sounds barbaric.
Yeah. But it's a marriage of convenience. And apparently she said yes, because at the end they're all together with the wives and commanders, and Mackenzie congratulates him. You fit in now or something. And Lawrence puts his hand on her shoulder and they don't look happy at all.
You're truly one of us, and all I could think of is that movie Freaks from, like, 1932, where it goes, one of us. Yeah. Like, oh, dear. This is crazy.
it's interesting that this is the arrangement that Serena wanted, but Naomi Putnam got it instead. She's more traditional.
She is. And remember, Lawrence said they didn't have a place for women like Serena.
Yeah.
I'd be terrified to be married to Serena. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I know.
That's not a good long-term plan.
She's way too intelligent. Like she plots mm-hmm. and plans with the best of them.
I also think that, you know, all three of us and probably most people hearing me probably think it's messed up to marry for anything but love. But I think it's worth noting that throughout history, marriage, especially among like the powerful, has more often than not been about joining houses and, mm-hmm. you know, practical things
Princess
like this.
Diana and King Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like marriage for love is kind of a more recent invention, I think. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like it that way.
Yeah.
You know, that scene, I wondered, should Naomi have been wearing black and not green?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Because she's kind of in mourning.
She was wearing the regular blue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right.
Yeah, I wonder if him being disgraced has anything to do with that, but I don't know.
That could be. Yeah. So do you have anything that you want to add to that, Jason?
No, that's it. I mean, now that actually, Wendy, you came in just so angry at Lawrence, and I think you're right. It doesn't seem quite as funny to me anymore, but I still think it's funny. No. Just the way that he plays it. Bradley Whitford, you know. He's so hilarious.
I also think, like, if I didn't have so much hope for him being a good guy, mm-hmm. ultimately, I wouldn't feel so strongly about it. You know,
what do you think he could do, though?
I know. And I felt like we were getting more of the real him last week. And then I think that just made me more angry at the events.
I think we got some of the real him in this episode because the emotion that he had when he was talking to June about his wife.
Especially about Eleanor, yeah.
June really got to him. She really got to him in that moment. She watched it happen.
I mean, she pretty much said she let it happen, right? That yeah. she could have stopped it. And he kind of brushed that under the rug.
It was almost like he knew. Like he always suspected that, yeah.
June says to Lawrence, Eleanor hated you, was so broken and so ashamed that she'd rather be dead, and I watched her die and did nothing. And Lawrence said that he knew that she had had something to do with it, but that Eleanor would still want him to help her with Hannah.
Well, and the thing is, even though June watched and didn't stop it from happening, I'm sure that Lawrence still feels like that all was his fault. Her death was his fault. Yeah. Because she couldn't cope with the life that they now led.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he felt the blame for that.
And that's, yeah. And that's like, I just think all of this is him feeling deeply ashamed. And that's why he's so ashamed that when this person admits that she let his wife die, he's still like, yeah, that was my fault.
It was his fault. And it was honestly the humane thing to do because she was having such a struggle.
She didn't want to be there anymore.
No, it was torture for her to live in this world that her husband created.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That makes me feel for him.
Yeah.
What? But is there something you think that he could... that he should do? Should he defect? I guess that would be...
He should either defect or he should be working towards the end of Gilead. And he's not doing that at all.
Being a spy.
No,
he's not. He's trying to reform it.
He says he's trying to fix it.
I mean, he's trying to destroy what little is left of the U.S.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, I don't know, that it's a bad lead for me. Like, that made me feel really...
Yeah.
angry for our country. You know, I know it's a fictional TV show,
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, for me, and man, I'm going to sound like a treasonist here, but I my big number one issue is climate change. And I think that unchecked capitalism is causing the death of our planet. And I think that we need to have serious regulations in place to stop that as quickly as possible. Look at all these huge bad weather events that are happening more and more and that we've been warned about for decades now. So I'm mad at that part of our society. And in The Handmaid's Tale, it got so bad that there was toxic waste everywhere. And I think it's implied that that's why the birth rate is so low. So when I see a character like him going, yeah, see, that didn't work, I can sort of get behind that. Like, yeah, that doesn't work. You gotta do something. You don't have to get rid of the whole country and become like Iran, you know, like become this theocracy where people lose their freedom. That's not the answer.
Right. It doesn't do you any good to have a wonderful climate in a world that's horror. No. Right.
But I'm just saying, like, for someone who, like, when what's happening became even worse and says, hey, that didn't work, I can sort of see that.
Something in the middle would probably be good.
Yeah. some other
idea.
Did
either of you notice who directed this episode?
I did not.
Mr. Bradley Whitford.
Oh, you said that nice. Last week. I remember.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Bradley Whitford directed this one. So I thought it was cool to see things kind of through his eye, like what his vision is.
It was certainly Lawrence-centric.
Yes.
And I always love when he's on the screen, good, bad, or indifferent. Like, he's great. And he lights up a screen.
Yes. I never saw West Wing, but this is making me want to go back and watch it.
I haven't, but my husband loved it.
I wonder if he was as good on there.
Check out Cabin in the Woods. He's fantastic in Cabin in the Woods. He just is. He plays this smart alecky character that just wants to see a merman. I mean, it's funny. He's very funny in it. So my first point is going to be what I'm calling Escape from Hell House, because that's what I call the Wheelers. One thing that I figured out from watching this episode is I think that Alanis definitely runs that household, even over her husband. At times, I think, given the way he looked at her multiple times in this episode, she is really, like, in charge of most of what's happening. Despite the fact she tries to play it as she's just, you know, the wife at home that keeps the house, there were times that he would look at her, like when Serena was going to feed Noah when they were at the birthing center. And Alanis wanted her to go very, very quickly. And he said, well, I think that's up to baby Noah. And he looked at her and he was kind of smiling and chuckling. And his face instantly dropped as soon as he looked at her.
She shot him a dirty look.
Well, she's already mad at him because, you know, he agreed to let Serena go.
The power dynamic.
Yeah.
Shifted there, or maybe it's always been shifted.
Yeah,
really, I think it's almost like he feels like all the interactions between the two of them are that's just woman stuff. And it's not worth my time to get involved in all that.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't think he would care that Alanis is hitting Serena. No.
Yeah.
Or arguing with each other or ordering her to her room. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, that's between the two of you. That's women stuff.
I think he just wants this fertility center to succeed. So when Serena went in there and was like, you know, this was my idea and I think it would be good for someone who actually has a baby to be there and show people or whatever she said. And he seemed kind of less kind than normal, but that's because she just shot his guy. Like he said, are you gonna shoot me? But so then when he said, okay, I'll take that under advisement, I thought he was just placating her and nothing was going to happen, but it turned out he was serious. And I think it's because he realized that she's right. It would be better to have someone there. And that's what he cares about, right? He cares about making that thing a success.
Definitely.
He doesn't care as much about the power dynamic between his wife and Serena.
No.
probably doesn't even notice it. I don't know.
She did butter him up when she was talking to him about it, and he acknowledged that he's kind of like, yeah, you know, I'm buttered up now. What do you want? And he even joked with her when she said, I was hoping to talk to you. He said to her, you gonna shoot me? And then she apologizes. At that point, I was thinking, in listening to her talk to him and basically kind of manipulate him, I thought, wow, she made a great lawyer, the way that she is able to articulate things with him.
And I think a lot of that is because what she's saying, she does believe in it. She does believe the fertility center is the best way to get women involved. She has a more primary concern right now, and that's for her to get her and her baby out. But she does believe that. And so I think it was a little easy for her to be so persuasive. And I think she did persuade him. Like,
she did.
He knows that she's crafty, but he still, I think, was persuaded by her.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to lie, it's easier when most of what you're saying is the truth. That's what I've been told. I've never tried that, but that's what I've heard.
But I also got the impression that it's Mrs. Wheeler that wants Noah more than Mr. Wheeler. I don't think he is thinking about taking the baby. I think she very much is thinking about Noah being her baby.
Oh, hell yeah. That's why Serena had to escape.
She did. She didn't have a choice. She had to get out.
Mrs. Wheeler is saying, you need to get him on the bottle. You need, you know, it's my baby won't be confused. I mean, she's using the word my. That's all signs that that she wants Serena, that it's a necessary evil in her eyes right now for her to be breastfeeding, but she wants her out of there as soon as possible. And that's her baby now.
The clock is ticking. And Serena knows it.
Yep.
But the minute Noah starts crying, Mrs. Wheeler's face changes completely. Like, she just looks put out by it. That the baby is crying.
She's got people for that. She doesn't want to deal with that part
of it. That's how Naomi was, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't want to deal with the little things. You know, children maybe should be seen but not heard, I guess.
It's just a prop in her life.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people like that. I know parents like that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Who is it? What are their first and last names?
In Gilead, it's really this power thing, though, to have children. Like, it ups your power game. But I don't get the sense, that that's the same in Gilead, Canada, which is what the Wheelers are trying to create. But I also don't feel like Mr. Wheeler is trying to recreate Gilead exactly in Canada. Because he's...
And that makes sense.
I mean, she says to him, praise be, and he's just like, oh yeah, like brushes it off.
That was so funny. He's like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And Alanis wore pants in this episode too, and I haven't seen her do that very often.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, when they were doing the photo shoot. Yeah.
Huh.
I would not want her micromanaging any photo shoot that I was doing. Or anything that I was doing.
Before, she was more like, oh yeah, the business stuff is for men and women shouldn't trouble themselves with that. But now she I mean, I think in this episode, she's Serena 2.0.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that's the idea Serena what it's like to have to be around herself.
And maybe she's jealous of Serena and she wants to emulate that. I don't know. But you're right. She was definitely into it all much more in this episode.
Yeah, she was really condescending and difficult.
Her thoughts about Serena have changed because of what Serena did, trying to escape. But I don't know. Maybe she was just trying to put on a nice face at the beginning.
I think she was really condescending to Serena. And I do think that you're right, Jason. I think in the beginning, she was really enamored with Serena because she wanted to be her. I think she wanted to be Serena 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have one question. When it's late at night and she comes into Mr. Wheeler's office, did that remind you of the first time June got called into Waterford's office?
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. Yes.
That took me back to that.
Yeah. And just that the and same and feeling. When Mrs. Wheeler, like, because then you see Serena getting in the car with the baby, and mm-hmm. the maid is saying, oh, great, Mr. Wheeler, you know, said it was okay for you to go. And then Mrs. Wheeler's there, and she goes, hello, or whatever, and she slapped her a couple of times.
Yeah.
And that felt like Serena, you know, something Serena would have done to June. And it also just pointed out, like, you're not supposed to be talking to my husband without me around.
And Serena just shocking. Had to sit there and take it.
Yep. Yeah. It's kind of like when one child goes to ask mommy if they can go and mommy says no, so they go ask daddy. I feel like that's probably what Mrs. Yeah. Wheeler is thinking is.
If your mommy is Joan Crawford. Yeah.
Yeah. My no should have been enough for you. You should not have gone to my husband to ask for this.
Oh, like, she didn't want her to go. Yeah.
No.
The whole dynamic, like, with Mrs. Wheeler saying the baby cries and she's going to go give breastfeed. Oh, you really ought to start pumping again. You should bottle feed. That's all he knew when you were at the detention center. That's a slight, like yep. when you were in jail. And then she goes, he must miss it. That's a total slap in the face.
Oh, metaphorically, she was
for now.
Yeah.
Like, because we know Serena was longing to breastfeed. And mm-hmm. also that's a connection with the baby and child, mm-hmm. like oxytocin release in the mm-hmm. mother and bonding. And she doesn't want, like Mrs. Wheeler is saying, I don't want that bond. And secondly, pumping, Jenny had to pump because she worked so much and it was a major pain in the ass for her. And she had to find a private place, keep all that equipment clean, mm-hmm. pump a long time just to get a little milk, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we ever like mishandled that milk, she was pissed. Like, you, that's precious. Yeah, you know how long it took you to get that?
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of effort and a lot of planning to do that.
I mean, it's just like, but the whole idea, and then Serena is like biting her tongue saying, it will be less confusing for him if he only nurses for now. And she goes, my smart boy won't get confused.
Oh, and so cringy. She's
just saying, this is my child now. And Serena's like almost spoke out against her. She like stepped up for a second. And then she was like, certainly she realized she can't do that.
Yeah, she's got to back down.
Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Wheeler, you know, goes over to Noah and says, I know you miss your bottle. And I couldn't help so but crazy. Think.
Yeah, right.
I'm quite so sure awful. He's just freaked out by your aura. Like, because she's just got this, ugh. She's, you wouldn't want to be around her. She's not the type of person you want to be around. I feel like sometimes kids get, their impression is the right one. Like, kids will have a reaction to people.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, no, no one knows that you... You're bad news and you need to go.
Bad vibes.
For sure.
But she is so petty in this that I always get tickled by characters like that.
Yeah.
She's just the worst.
She is. She plays it really well. She does. Yeah, she does. She's great. Yeah.
So the woman that was helping Serena, I felt like that was the only kindness she was getting from this house was this one.
The nanny.
The nanny. Like she was... She was kind to Serena right from mm-hmm. the beginning.
Yeah.
And when they go into the room and Serena asks for privacy, I mean, she even tried, the nanny even tried to take responsibility for not having a bottle
mm-hmm.
at that
They're
time.
They're definitely on Serena's side.
Yeah. And so Serena goes in that room and you see
if
the
only
exit.
She knew what Serena was like.
Yeah. You go
but
in the
I think
room.
That shows growth for Serena. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe because she's in a vulnerable position and she needs help from wherever she can get it. But this is a person that previously Serena wouldn't have glanced twice at. But she actually seemed to be getting comfort and companionship from her.
For sure. But like we've said before, the real test will be if and when Serena gets back in a position mm-hmm. of power, then how she treats people like that.
Well, you saw the door when Serena went into the room and you saw the exit door was there.
Uh-huh. It's like, go for it!
Run! That's all I can think
of. I was surprised. I didn't think it would happen so soon. Yeah. Or I thought she was going to get immediately caught. But it seemed like the person that picked her up is going to be an ally, but...
Yeah.
It seemed like it, yeah. And I would guess at this time, it really feels like a plot hole to me that she hasn't called Mark yet. So I feel like that's the next step, right?
Yeah, driving her to Mark.
Yeah, just go to Mark Twaitla's house, please. Thank you.
Why did you not get... I mean, I don't understand why she didn't, but maybe she will. Maybe she'll get in touch with him and he can maybe help her get out, like disappear, get away somehow. Because she's going to have to be careful she really doesn't have... a long list of people to trust. She's got nobody but Mark, really. I mean, he did try to...
That's all I can think of.
He tried to get her to way back at the beginning of the season, and she didn't really listen. She thought she knew what was best until it definitely wasn't.
This whole thing is so great because... I mean, it sounds weird to describe it that way. I'm feeling two things at once. I feel... sorry for Serena, for sure. And I don't think anybody should have to be in a position where they fear that they're going to be separated for their child. But also, it's like, ha ha. It's like speaks to the larger message of the show. When you advocate for a government that restricts your freedom, you might end up being on the wrong side of that at some point.
Yeah.
You need to push for a system that's compassionate and fair and free, you know?
That's what I felt at the beginning of the last episode when she's in a co-ed prison area pumping. And like on the one side, like that should never happen to anybody. And I did feel bad for her. But then on the other side, it was like,
yeah. So when she had the opportunity to run away, did you want her to? Or did you want her to end up staying? I wanted her to run.
No. I wouldn't wish anybody Wheeler House.
The overriding instincts are, I want, because she's got the baby with her, you know, I want what's best for her. I want her to get away and go meet up with Mark and fly to Hawaii.
I want to see what she would do with her freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without any worries or pulls to get power, if she just was on her own and just existed and lived without having to think about a power play every 5 minutes.
Right.
Because I feel like that's how she's had to live.
Yeah.
But you know the parable of the scorpion and the frog, I think?
No.
Where the scorpion needs to get across the river and... the frog, he's like, can I get on your back and take you across? You can take me across. And the frog's like, I don't trust you. You're going to sting me. No, I need to get across. Okay. So then they get halfway across and the scorpion stings the frog and, you know, they're both going to drown. And the frog's like, why'd you do that? And he goes, well, I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature.
Oh,
what is that as well?
Well, Serena, like, you think she's not going to be a schemer anymore? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be that she turns over a new leaf and she's great and we love her for another whole season.
But I also think that she must now understand that Gilead is not going to help her. And she's got to let go of that.
Right.
Like, that bridge has to be burned. She has to be thinking for herself. And what's best for her and for Noah and not how she can infiltrate anything. Because she has to, this is new to her. She has to think about herself and the child. She can't just be thinking about what she wants.
That's all a great point because it puts her in a position we've never seen her in before.
Yeah.
Like, what would she do if she had to let go of the whole thing?
Yeah.
Then start over. What's her purpose?
Yeah. I will say my last thing, Genevieve Angelson is playing Mrs. Wheeler. I think she's killing it. She's
great. She's really good.
She's doing her job of making me like, I can't stand her. Like, I want to slap her.
Angelic face, too.
Yes. Like,
I feel the same way about her as I did about Serena
in
the first couple of seasons. And now we have compassion for Serena sometimes. So it's possible we could have compassion for Mrs. Wheeler at some point, but it's hard to imagine.
It's so hard to imagine. Just like it was hard to imagine that we would have compassion for Serena ever.
Yep.
But we do.
And Mr. But, Wheeler's pretty good too. That actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so Wendy, what is your next point?
My next point is about Hannah.
Oh, yes. So
we haven't seen a lot throughout the entire show about what Hannah thinks or feels. We've seen flashbacks of her. We saw her sleeping at the Mackenzies. We saw her in the terrible cage being afraid of everything. But we don't really know Hannah, the Hannah we see today. Does she remember her mom and dad? Is she happy? How is she really coping after being torn away from her family and given to another family and kind of expected to play daughter and play family with them? So this first glimpse of this new, grown, beautiful, tall Hannah was really exciting to me because we haven't seen anything. We see her marching around. We see what she's in this center, the wife center, which reminded me so much of the Red Center that it was kind of scary. But it was all more it was less harsh than the Red Center. But I think I was really excited to see that Hannah knows what her name is. She remembers that her name is Hannah. I'm assuming she remembers Luke and June a little bit if she remembers that her name is Hannah. And not only that, but she knows enough to write her name. And I am sure she's preached at every single day about what a sin that is to do that. But there's enough left of Hannah that she's writing her name out. And I think it's funny because we could have seen a scene with her talking with her friends or interacting with the aunts of the wife center. But just this tiny little scene of her writing her name on a piece of paper said so much, I think, about mm-hmm. where Hannah is and gave us so much hope about maybe she's still able to be at least partly the Hannah that she was. And so I just thought that was so sweet and also so heartbreaking all at the same time. We see June watching the wife center on the live feed, and June is so close to getting her back. And she's watching the live feed, and you could just feel her hope and longing. And it just, the show just gets me, you know. You can really feel June. I mean, I'm a mom. I can only imagine what that feels like, you know, to be separated from your child and have it dangled right in front of you, mm-hmm. only to be ripped out again.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like Hannah, we're so worried that she's just forgotten June and yep. is scared of her. And is like, now she's Agnes and barely remembers anything of her former life. So this really said, no, that's, it's not that, whatever it is, she still has like
a piece of Hannah's like, there.
Yeah. And you're not even supposed to write or read.
No, so you're not.
It's also something too. And so when June was sort of looking up just like longingly, and then you see Hannah, it felt like, this is a little weird, but in Return of the Jedi, when Vader and Luke sense each other, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, Vader's evil, so that's where the metaphor falls down, but it's like father and son, there's a bond separated by space, but they can still sort of sense each other or something. It felt like something like that they were going for. But most of all, it was just really nice to know that mm-hmm. Hannah still has some Hannah in there.
Yeah, I like the way that they shot that, that it went back, mm-hmm. the way that it went back and forth.
Yeah,
and they're sleeping in these weird tents. Like, that really did feel Red Center to me, just how mm-hmm. they're, you know, they're kept in that little area. But I did appreciate the way that it was shot and the way that we got to see it going back and forth. And then Hannah writing her name was just like, I just felt good because mm-hmm. you know that there's still a piece of her in there. Mm-hmm. That knows who she is, no matter what they've raised her to believe.
Yeah.
Yep. That made me want, because, I mean, the whole rescue mission, I thought from the beginning, this isn't going to work. I don't think it's going to work. I didn't know for sure.
I'm a sucker.
I didn't think it was going to work.
I mean, where there's a little bit of doubt is because it would be really interesting to see Hannah come to June and then have to see that struggle because how much Hannah's changed. That there's good story to be told there, and I hope we get that story. I don't know if we ever will, but it would be great. So that's where I was sort of thinking it would be nice to see. But really, the part that made me think it was not going to work is when this Commander Elijah Vance showed up, and he was so handsome and smart and capable and knew her name and everything about them. I'm like, okay, this mission is going to be a failure. This guy's a dead man.
Yeah. I thought that too. And I felt bad for thinking that it was not going to work, but I just don't think we're ready for that piece of the story yet. I don't think that's what is going to happen this season.
I guess I didn't think it was like going to go super smoothly and they rescued all the girls in the white school and come back. I thought something ominous was going to happen, especially because they ended it on those jet planes revving up in the last episode. So I felt like something was happening, but I guess I just didn't think it was just going to be boom, failure. Everybody's dead.
Think about it. They're at a former Air Force academy. The planes that we heard at the end could have been planes going to intercept Tuello's planes coming in.
That's true. That's very true. Could have been them revving up, getting ready.
Yeah.
It could have been a lot worse, too.
Yeah.
Hannah could be gone.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I was worried about when she looked up at the sky in the end of the last episode.
Yeah. Like they were going to make a mistake.
And Lawrence even said it this time. He said something about you put the kids in danger or something like that.
Yeah. So, Jason, what do you have at your next point?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I mean, I might be done. See, the only thing that's left to talk about is June and Nick. And I guess I'll talk about that. So June tells Mark, you know, I don't want to stop fighting. She says no to Bethlehem. Let's fight. What's next? Mark's glad she turned Lawrence down. Of course, that's the last thing he wants is for June Osborne to go put the rubber stamp on this system that will help eradicate the U.S. for good. So anyway, he brings up Nick and says he gave Nick the opportunity to defect and come to Canada, and she looks surprised Nick didn't accept, and she's just vibing, I want Nick, you know. They're just pushing us back towards this Nick and June romance, and I know some listeners like it.
I didn't like
it, so I'll try not to be too I just don't. And so then, you know, and even earlier Lawrence had tried to entice June into going to New Bethlehem by saying Nick would be there, and she seemed impacted by that. What? And so anyway, Mark said he had originally asked Nick to be a spy for a while and then defect. So I'm not clear if he's, you know, now he's sending June to try to convince him. He says if a former I and a commander defecting from Gilead would have a big impact, but I don't know if June's just trying to convince him to defect now or to be a spy. I think just defect now, right? That seemed to be what he sent her there to do.
It seemed odd. I didn't quite get the point of it. Like, what was the point just for him to come and turn her down? Like, it was an odd scene. I felt like it was a little bit out of place.
I mean, I'm just questioning what was the point. Like, I think it was, well, I know it was either to convince Nick to be a spy and then defect to the U.S. or just simply to defect, because he said, you know, it would have a big impact to have a person
Mark
power
would
like
probably
Nick to
take
defect.
Whatever he could get.
Right.
Yeah. But I also think it was a plot point for June to find out that his wife is pregnant. I think it's something that they put together for that. Yeah.
So she meets with him, and I was wondering where they were, and then she said, oh, you're doing well for yourself looking at his house. So I'm like, okay, I guess they're at his house in Gilead. It seems like a big deal for June to go to Gilead, but I guess Mark can just sneak her in there.
Right. It all happens a little too easily.
Too quickly, yeah. And then June's like mad that Nick didn't accept his offer to defect, and then he's like, I can't just pick up and leave. I have a wife. And she goes, well, I have Luke and Nicole, but you can bring Rose with you. And I felt that was interesting because you know that it's not simple, right? She yearns for him, but she's trying to rationalize. I mean, I wasn't sure if she was just like, I don't care. I just want you near me. Or maybe she was not really thinking it through. Or maybe she was fully thinking we could have our two families together and then we could have an affair. You know, I don't know. But Nick says Rose is happy in Gilead, which was a bit of a surprise to me because Rose seems like the type that might want to get out, but no, she's okay with it there.
If you take him by his word.
If you take him by his word. Then she says she's pregnant, and June seemed hurt by that. And my take on that was, now she knows that it's a real marriage. She wasn't sure about that.
Yeah.
And she looked like she had a realization there. And then Nick said, well, Gilead's changing. There's progress under Lawrence. We're making it better. Well, this puts Nick in the same position as Lawrence. Mm-hmm. They want to stay and try to reform Gilead.
Even though he has the choice to get out.
Yeah. And I mean, I bet Lawrence could too. I bet Mark would be glad to have Lawrence as a defector. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I would say to Nick, like, you're okay being here, but what if you have a baby girl? Mm-hmm. You're going to be okay with what happens to that baby girl? Anyway, then Nick goes up to June all of a sudden, all smoldery, vibey and everything. And she's like, this is a fine mess, isn't it? The world's a mess. I wish the world would just go away just for a little bit. And I'm like, I feel so sorry for Luke right now.
I didn't like it.
They've spent all this time
building up Luke and June.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's good storytelling because it's mm-hmm. love isn't simple. And I also think it's sometimes it's heartbreaking. Right. And I do think that if all the barriers to these two, like they're married to other people, but also they can't be in the same place. I think if they could be in the same place, that they would leave their spouses and be with each other. Maybe. Don't you think?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think it's based on the trauma that they've experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which can have a strong pull.
Yeah.
Because nobody else is going, you're not going to share that with anybody else or anything like it. But yeah. I think Luke is her
rock
partner.
She seems more intense about Nick. More drawn to him. With Luke, she's like comfortable and amused and he's can kind of rest in him. But with Nick, she's like passionate, you know? That's what the passion is.
That usually doesn't last as long. Mm-mm.
But it can wreck a marriage in the meantime.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. When she was outside destroying the garden, he went out and held her and got her to stop and...
Hey, we worked hard on that, honey. Don't.
No, I think he was just trying. I think he was just really trying to get her to come back to planet Earth because she was in a rage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I'd rather she channel her rage by tearing apart the garden than going out and causing some other problem that ends up having bigger ramifications.
Taking her gun out somewhere.
Yeah.
I wish we saw more of Rose and Nick because I just can't get a handle on them. Like, are they real? Are they not real? Like, they've seemed pretty genuine in the last few
mm-hmm. Especially her towards him.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yes.
But now he's saying he doesn't want to leave because he has his family. So
yeah.
I think it's similar. I think Rose and Nick are similar to Luke and June.
And it feels like Rose and Nick are still both committed to Gilead.
Yeah.
Better or worse.
Yeah. Well, I felt for Rose when there was a woman that was at their little, I'm not even sure what on earth that meeting was, where the men were in the other room and the women were out in the parlor. They were all celebrating the fact that Rose is having a baby. And then the one woman says, well, aren't you concerned about, like, defects?
So Rose has a disability, and I think and I think
MS
that is going to come into play, because they wouldn't be in the plot if it wasn't coming into play in the future.
Yeah.
For sure. We'll just leave that up to God.
Right. Because that's what you say to expectant parents. Aren't you worried about the genetics?
I know.
Yeah.
People in Gilead are assholes.
Mm. They really are. Especially the women. And the men, really. I mean, they're all...
The men aren't so great.
No, they're not. Wendy, I thought that you'd be really happy. We seem to get quite a bit of Mark in this episode.
He's so great. I'll just put my note in that I had. You know how the episode begins with scenes from the previous episode? And I missed this completely. At the very end of the last episode, where June and Luke and Moira are all dancing around excited about the raid, and they're all yelling, I fucking love Mark Tuello. I'm gonna record that and put it for my ringtone.
Well, I wondered if you might do that.
I missed that the first time around.
I did not. I had a feeling you'd be super excited about it.
I thought it was funny how when Mark tells them about the raid and everything, and then he's like, yeah, we're going to be watching it live and we'll let you know what happens. And Jude's like, we need to be there. He goes, but none of the other families gave you the intel to make this happen. Okay. I'm like, he's such a pushover.
He's owled by June.
I love how
they're so fickle. They hated his guts like three episodes ago.
Oh, yeah. But it was funny because that was sort of the joke, right?
Right.
They know that they're making with each other. We love Mark.
Yes.
I really liked the depth that we saw from his character in this episode, because in one, you know, he's very honest about, you know, we're going on this mission, this is what's going to happen. And then you can see the range where he's trying to keep it together, because all of these men and women have just died in this failed mission, and he's going to have to go and tell the families. And then at the end of the episode, when they're doing the memorial, like, gathering, which that was really... For me, it was kind of polarizing, because they're trying to do a remembrance and there are the protesters in the background screaming, and a little girl's trying to do the Pledge of Allegiance after Mark has been reading the names of those who died. And I just feel like we got a lot of range out of him in this episode. And I have to admit, I've been worried for Mark, because I'm just afraid that he's going to get shot. Like,
well, the U.S. is in trouble. I mean, yeah. I think that's what this is showing. Like, the Canadians want them out. The Canadian government doesn't want to deal with them anymore. They just used Canadian airspace to launch this attack, which is going to get Canada in trouble with Gilead, who they're trying to be at peace with.
I would think Canada would have had to have approved that, though, right?
Oh, from the government.
Yeah, but still. Yeah, but it happening, especially when Mark was like, yeah, they're just going to kill anyone that gets in their way. I'm like, this is an act of war. Mm-hmm. You know, the U.S. is already Gilead's enemy, but Canada's trying to make nice. Right. So, yeah. And then at the end, he's like, they're putting troops on the border. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but he also said that attack ended up strengthening alliances with China, Russia, North Korea, all the horrible authoritarian governments. And then Lawrence is like, yeah, what's the old saying? Any club that have me as a member? But nobody else laughed at that.
Right. So I'm like, I felt really emotional at that flag scene. Again, I think just this week's been tough for everybody. And I fear that Mark is running out of options. And I think he feels that he feels that he's running out of options and that he's being backed into a corner. That's why they made that move. And then it was a complete failure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I worry for our people that are living in Canada mm-hmm. as, you know, yeah. they sought asylum there. And now they're not wanted. I'm really concerned.
Right. They don't have permanent status. And that no. happens. I remember when the U.S. Mm-hmm. pulled out of Afghanistan, they gave all of these visas to young people, college age, to go to college in America. But it was like for a year. You got a year visa. And I remember listening to The Daily about these kids. You know, you don't know what's going to happen to you at the end of the year, but here, go, you know, go mesh with American culture and take a year of college. But at the end of this year, you have no idea what's going to happen to you. Are you going to be deported? Are you going to see your family? I mean, just crazy.
Yeah, it's too many things true to life, mm-hmm. I guess. A lot. Mm-hmm. I feel like as the season has gone on, there have just been a lot of things that you can look at happening in the world today. And, you know, Margaret
I think it's created that way on purpose. I think yeah. it's reflecting what's happening.
Yeah, I question that.
In different places in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I question that when they were reading the list of countries that were
yeah,
sympathetic or wanted, were willing to chat now.
And I think last week they made a reference to Putin. I think mm-hmm. that's all purposeful.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Bruce Miller has
is Bruce said Willis in the show?
He doesn't always do that on purpose, but
no.
It could be what you read into it because of what's mm-hmm. happening. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I mean it yeah, things seem pretty hopeless on several different fronts, and given that there's one more season left, it does kind of make sense to end the second to the last season in a dark place potentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't yeah. seen the finale yet, but you know, it's like towards the end of a movie when things are going really bad, so hopefully at the end we're not going to feel like that at the end of season six, you know.
Well,
I'd like to have some notes of hope in there.
No, this is The Handmaid's Tale.
I know, but
and unlike The Walking Dead, none of these people are bulletproof.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Game of Thrones, and I won't give away the ending, but I always, people were like really hopeful. And I'm like, haven't you been watching this show?
Yeah, right.
But
exactly.
They always said it would be bittersweet. And mm-hmm. by the end of that, there was a lot of bitter, but there was a lot of sweet too. So I'm hoping for some of that with Handmaid's Tale too.
Yeah, I agree.
If we could get a few yeah. things, if someone can find some happiness or some contentment yeah, exactly. or be able to move mm-hmm. forward, that would be nice. I'm optimistic, yeah. but I don't know that that's necessarily what's going to happen. I'm trying to be hopeful myself. For
I'm not expecting rainbows and unicorns, but just no. maybe a little nice something.
No.
I don't definitely think anybody watching not. This show is.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
No. I think some people that watched Game of Thrones may have been expecting that, though, based on the reactions.
Yeah.
It
was happier than I thought it was going to be honest.
I felt the same way.
I thought more people were going to die. So yeah. I was like, okay, is it my favorite finale ever? No. But it was what it was, and it closed the door. And that's what a finale is supposed to do. They can't all be like 6 feet under. That was the finale to which all other finales are measured against. At least for me.
Yep. I agree. Nope. Same.
All right. So all I have left are just a couple of notes. Basically, one, Lydia seems to be invested in what Lawrence is doing because she finds a use for him, and she kind of brokered this marriage. I mean, she was kind of a marriage broker between mm-hmm. Naomi and Lawrence. So I feel like she played a part in that for sure. I think it's in her best interest that Lawrence continues to try to renovate Gilead and keeping Naomi. I mean, this is a way to keep Naomi from having to go to the colonies, which I don't think that they would send her there. But who knows? I mean, anything can happen on this show. I did like the one thing that June said. I was not a big fan of the June and Nick scenes, but I did like that she said to him, children look to their fathers, you know, set an example. I don't know, you know, what that will, if that will bear any fruit. But I hope he took it to
heart. He just like stared at her blankly and then turned around and left.
There was a point where he goes up to her and I thought he was going to kiss her goodbye and he just turns and walks away.
Yeah. Psych.
I'm just like, okay.
It's like, what is that?
All right. That's
asshole.
You being you. And also the ending scene, June protecting the little girl. And the bullet holes hitting the flag, that really, like...
That was powerful.
That was very powerful. And that's pretty much all I have. Wendy, do you have any notes?
Nope, I'm done.
All right, how about you, Jason?
Only one, because Hannah was in this episode, and I think she's 12 in the show, I wanted to look up. The actress, from what I found, is 11. Jordana Blake. And I was kind of thinking maybe they have Hannah being 1 year older because Hannah's going to play more of a part next year. And so then Jordana Blake will be 12 or 13, you know, so make her a little older than the actress actually is. I hope so. I'd love to see more Hannah.
She's gorgeous.
And just get to know what she's like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I like knowing that she can write her name. That just gives me hope that there's that Hannah's still in there.
Yep.
All right. That is our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows.
I've been having so much fun podcasting on the last bit of Walking Dead with Lucy. I don't know, it feels like we're grooving. We always do, but it almost feels like that old Jason and Karen kind of magic lately.
You two have to continue with something.
You have to.
If for no other reason than to make me happy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, no, it's really, really,
you guys
fun.
Do so good. I could listen to you talk about anything.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm happy she wants to. Because the plan for the Walking Dead cast is to turn it into The Cast of Us about HBO's The Last of Us. And Ben and Rima will also be in the mix, but Lucy as well. And then we will also cover the Walking Dead spinoffs on there, but we're kind of rebranded and try that for a little while. So anyway, yeah, Lucy's just going to continue on with all of that. I mean, we're going to try to find somebody else to podcast about the Negan show since no one wants to hear us talk about Negan.
Oh. Who likes Megan? How about Jill?
Yeah, there's plenty of people.
There are the Megan apologist group.
But you know what, Jason? It doesn't have to be someone who loves Negan. It could just be someone who doesn't despise him to the point of not wanting to talk about him.
Yeah, I just don't want to bum out the listeners.
No, so it could be a good discussion though.
I think Ben is going to do it. Actually, I just remembered. And then rotate in guest hosts.
So that's cool.
That'll be cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. And by the way, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. How many of you will actually go and do that? Since you heard me say it, hopefully everyone hearing my voice. Thank you.
Go do it. It's so easy to do. Next time on the podcast, we will be responding to your feedback for The Handmaid's Tale, Season 5, Episode 9, Allegiance. And we'll also be including any other feedback that you have sent in.
That's fun, too. We just started doing a separate feedback episode with The Walking Dead. And it was cool because we were refreshed we didn't have a whole we didn't just finish podcasting for an hour when we got to the feedback. So I think you guys are going to enjoy it. We'll see how it goes.
But, for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hour and a half.
So over on my podcast, Run for Your Lives, we posted our Halloween special, which was Halloween Ends. Depending on how you feel about that movie, that will determine whether you enjoy the podcast or not. But we had a lot of fun with it. And that's our last episode until December 2nd. We are taking a 1 month break. We'll be recording a few episodes and just kind of giving ourselves a chance to breathe a little bit. We do this every season. But because our break had fallen into the time period that was October, we couldn't leave our fans without some monster goodness. So,
Yeah, and if you guys want to listen to that, you should totally check it out. Daphne and Paik do disaster movies, monster movies, things like that.
You guys just did It.
Yeah. It-tober.
I really liked that. Yeah.
It-tober.
Yeah. And,
did anybody like Halloween Ends? Are there people who are like super into it?
Well, there were a few that thought it was good. We got some feedback. And then we got a call from Mark and a call from Ben. And Ben's thoughts kind of mirror what we were thinking. So it was, yeah, it ended up being great.
I think with those shows, you have to know what you're going into and have a few cocktails and enjoy it.
We did. We knew yeah. what it could have been and what it probably was going to be.
I think I've seen the Halloween movies at the movies, not this year, but the last 2 years in a row with friends. And we just goof around and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not sure what we'll do next year. We may go back and do a special on the original Halloween.
I'm sure there'll be another one.
Oh, I think the Laurie Strode versus Michael Myers story has come to an end. At least that is what they're saying.
Okay, you want to put some
money on that? No, because... Yeah, probably not. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Wendy, are you on any podcasts you want to talk about?
No, this is it for me. I'm doing... I'm waiting for Yellow Jackets to come out and Wheel of Time. That's what I'm waiting for. But I will also enjoy a nice break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Breaks are always good.
Yeah.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Tea?
I hate tea.